Welcome to your Friday Night Live. It is the end of the month. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show would be deeply and delightfully and gratefully and humbly appreciated. My novel, The Future, has gotten remastered. We'll be putting that out this weekend with a new PDF, really beautifully formatted, so it makes it much more easy to read. So look for that this weekend. Other than that, I'm, of course, happy to take your questions and comments and issues. Shout out to Candace Owens, who is doing some pretty interesting work regarding French politics at the moment. Good for her. It's France is a creepy country, man. France is a I've only been to France once. I spent quite a bit of time there in the business world, and it's a freaky country, man. Very, very strange, subterranean, semi-demonic stuff. Maybe it's since the French Revolution or even before that, but it is the home of most of the natural demons of humanity, at least in the European side. And it is a very odd, freaky, and unpleasant type of country as a whole. Yeah, racist, is all they say, right? It's all they say. Racist, I smoke my galatoise, and I am just... And the
French intellectuals are just... Is Candace still on about Macron's wife? Yes, that does seem to be the thesis that she is working with.
And it is pretty wild. It is pretty wild. And it'll be interesting to see where she takes it. Honestly, I'll be straight honest with you. It's going to be interesting to see where she takes it. I don't know where exactly it's going to go, but it is going to be interesting to see where she takes it. And what about your comments, questions, issues, challenges? Of course, I certainly do have my thoughts. Another plane just crashed into a row of houses in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And a massive fire has broken out. Casualties are being reported. Huge emergency response underway. I don't know why people are surprised at this kind of stuff. If you have a system that is built on meritocracy, if you have anything other than a raw meritocracy, it's going to collapse. And if you have a raw meritocracy, then ethnic representation will be uneven. We all know this. This is stuff that I talked about years and years and years and years and years and years and years ago. And I suppose because the world didn't listen to reason, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to learn from bitter experience. And I guess everyone who helped to deplatform me, everyone who helped to oppose, I don't know, not putting them in my camp or anything like that, but people like Charles Murray or James Watson and so on. All the people who just say slander at people exploring science and facts and data and evidence. Well, I hope you enjoy having nail-biting flights, because that's how it's going to be. And there's no way around it other than coming to reason, and hopefully people are not so addicted to outrage and moral grandstanding that they can't learn some kind of rationality. I'm not holding my breath. People just seem to be really uniquely addicted to unreality. So yeah, there's been another one of these. Now, did you notice this? did you notice this? So after a decade, men had paid off what percentage of their student loans? After a decade, men had paid off what percentage of their student loans? Oh, my. Hello from India. Hello, Paula. Don't forget to donate, everyone. Starting tomorrow, Steph will get charged 25% extra in tariffs to send these podcasts down south. Oh, Lord knows. Lord knows. 70%, 13%, 80%, 25%. Well, no, some of these loans are pretty big. So over a decade, men had paid off about 30% of their loans a decade after graduation.
What percentage of their loans had women paid off? Because we want equality, apparently. You know, we just want equality as a whole. So men had paid off about a third of their student loans. And what percentage of their student loans, I think this is in America, had women paid off? So I shouldn't laugh. I shouldn't laugh because it does kind of sort of kill the birth rate, but that is. It seems important. It seems important. I will put it here. So, women had paid off about 3% of their loans after about a decade. After about a decade, women had paid off about 3% of their loans, 2009 to 2019, and men had paid off 30% of their student loans. I shouldn't laugh, but dear, oh dear, what can you say? What can you say? I mean, I think for women as a whole, it just feels like, why would they, to pay off debt feels like they're unattractive, because if they're really attractive, then some man should swoop in and pay off all their debt, right? 30% in 10 years is still freaking depressing. Yes, but less depressing than 3. That's, yeah. It's crazy, man. And this is like student loan debt is, like student loan debt forgiveness is just another transfer for male taxpayers to irresponsible female degree holders. I got a degree in communications / political science / health / kinesiology, sports medicine. Anything that could actually really add to the economy in any practical way? I'll get back to you on that. Oh. Well, on the plus side, though, not only are women horrifically in debt and therefore unmarriable, but also they have been trained to hate men, freedom, free speech, capitalism, the market, and small government. So there's that, too. They have been charged to become unmarriable. I mean, I would never in a million years, and I wouldn't even go out on dates with women who had a lot of debt. Like the moment I found out about any kind of significant debt, peace out, baby. Peace out. I was not going to do it. I do not get involved in paying. You know, I remember talking about this one woman that I met who was very pretty and seemed kind of smart, but then she was talking about how her last boyfriend had used her credit cards and left her $17,000 in debt. And of course, in general, I don't want to sound jumpy, overly jumpy. I don't want to sound overly jumpy, but I will say this, that when a woman can, if you're a young, reasonably attractive man, right? If a single woman, tell me if this is just me, right? If this is just me. If there is a woman, you're on a date, and there's a woman who's complaining about her money issues, why do you think she's complaining while wearing a low-cut top? Why do you think she's complaining about her money issues? Just out of curiosity. Is it just me? Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. Guess I grew up with my mom, but what's your perception as a man of why women complain about money issues on a date? Because I'll tell you my perception. Yeah, she wants you to pay it off. Yes, that's right. She's basically saying that one of the things that is going to be required to move forward with her is to take some ownership of her debt. And of course, I had vowed from the very beginning of my dating life never ever to dangle wealth in front of a woman. Well, it was pretty easy at the beginning of my dating life because I was broke, but you know what I mean. So here's another interesting thing. This is from Ali on X. Educated women are getting married about as often as they always have. While the red pill loves to pretend women going to college is the issue, they've got the problem almost exactly backwards. Women who avoid college are less likely to marry. Yeah, that's true. So a bachelor's degree or higher, women are marrying, well, this is women born 1930 to 1980. So it started off almost 80%. And women who are educated are getting married still at the rate of 71%. It is the women who've gone down in a straight line who are not college educated. They've gone down to 52%. So, share of U.S. women married at age 45 by birth year and education level. And so it remains at 71% for bachelor's degree or higher. Non-college has gone down. There's non-college men. Sorry. For non-college educated women, men are far easier to replace with the welfare state. All right. Let's see here. All right, let's see here. How do you find the balance between not dangling your resources before women, but still showing them you're able to obtain resources? Well, I mean, when I got a nice car, I had a company car and I had a nice car, I would be happy to pick up women on a date. It was a 98 Volvo S70 red, beautiful matchbox car of my youthful dreams. And to me, it was all the car in the known universe. And it was nice. It was nice. It was nice. So, yeah, I mean, but I would pay for the first date if it wasn't too expensive. I would pay for the first date. But after that, I would see if she offered to pay. Yeah, I wouldn't just keep paying. That's humiliating. That's a humiliation ritual. All right. Mobius Mirage, thank you for the tip. Says, hey, Steph, do you... it's another bald joke. Do you ever have problems with bald eagles trying to pick you up to take you back to the nest? That's a bad joke on every level. I mean, it's not funny. And bald eagles wouldn't pick me up because I look more like an egg. They wouldn't pick me up to take me back to the nest because I'm bigger than they are. Like, that's just a really... just a bad joke. Taking bald eagles and saying that there's a bald guy is just strange. And it's funny to me, it's just by the by, I just kind of find this funny, is that guys who kept their hair, it's not like you became muscular. It's not like you learned how to play the guitar. If you kept your hair, you just happened to have those genetics. That's all. I had genetics that abandoned hair. And you had genetics that kept hair. It's like guys who are proud because they're tall. It's like, yeah, well earned. Or like siblings who are like, they have this weird pride because they exited the vagina tube sooner than the other. You really earned that, didn't you? It is the saddest thing in the world to see people taking pride in completely unearned shit. I was trying to imply that they mistook you for a large baby eagle, but I will try harder next time. But why would a baby eagle be out of the nest in the first place? And do baby eagles, are they bald? Let's have a look here. Baby bald eagles are not bald. So it just doesn't work in any conceivable way. At all. So the baby bald eagles are very fluffy like dandelions. I don't have their hair. They stay in the nest and so on. And they're tiny, of course, right? So it just, you know, if you're going to, as I said this in our last show, man, if you're going to make a joke to a bald guy, try not to make it grindingly, blindingly obvious. Hey, there's an animal with the word bald in it. You're bald. I'm going to jam the two together, even if it makes no comic sense whatsoever. It's lazy. I mean, hey, man, there's stuff to make fun of me about. Absolutely. There's stuff to make fun of me about, for sure. Can be a little bit verbose, a lot of tangents. Yeah, there's stuff to. But the idea that you would make fun of me for something utterly beyond my control, you know, I guess I could, get hair transplants or something like that, but that's totally cucking, and it's not a man's job to be pretty. Wanting to be pretty is kind of gay. Not a man's job to be pretty. So I'm bald. Yeah. It's honestly not offensive to me. It's just, what a silly thing to pick on. It's not a negative. In fact, in combat, it was a real positive to be bald because it's diverting stuff to testosterone. And also you can't grab at someone's hair if they're bald, right? So you can't grab them and yank them around as you could with some guy's hair. So, all right. Why do you need to make a bald joke? I'm just out of curiosity as a whole, right? Why do you need to make a bald joke? Because let me ask you this, Mobius, let me ask you this. How old are you and have you kept your hair? Because let's not bullshit, right? Let's not bullshit. I am the alpha male in the room and you're making fun of bald to level up. Let's not bullshit each other, right? We're men, right? We're men. So when a man makes fun of your appearance, this is a leveling up. This comes out of insecurity, right? This comes out of insecurity. Why, of all the things, right, of the great things that I've done in the world, the hundreds of thousands or millions of people that I've helped, the billion plus fewer instances of child abuse because of what it is that I have done, right? Why pick on the bald things, which is utterly outside of my control? It's petty. Do you know what I mean? Like this is a philosophy show. So again, I have no problem with jokes. I think it's great. I make fun of myself. That's fine. But it's tiny, small. No, bad jokes should get a ban. I'm fine with the jokes. But it's just, you know, we work at a sort of elevated and rarefied level here, right? Well, I mean, we're trying to. It doesn't mean we can't make a dick joke or a bald joke or whatever. That's fine. But why? Why do you? And this is an interesting. Hedera says, "Hi, Steph. I'm pregnant. Thank you for all your help, and I'm looking forward to raising the next generation." Yay! Well, massive, fantastic, wonderful, deep, and beautiful. Congratulations. I think that's wonderful. Thank you so much for telling us and keep us posted on how things are going. So, yeah, just mocking someone's involuntary appearance is not elevated. Right? It's not elevated. It's pretty much the least important thing about me that I'm bald. Right? What's interesting about that, right? It's like being short. It's not a choice. I'm skinny. Some people have large noses. Who cares? So I'm not trying to nag you or anything like that. I'm just trying to say that it seems to me that if your go-to thing is mocking people's appearance, you probably are surrounded by some pretty low company, right? You're probably surrounded by some pretty trashy low company, and that's what you signal to other people when you do that kind of stuff, right? You signal to other people that this is the level of socializing or socialization that you're working with, right? Or you just make, hey, bald joke, right? Somebody else says they're pregnant too. That's wonderful. I appreciate you telling us and keep us Keep us posted about how things are going, and congratulations. Somebody said, I run the New York City office of a Fortune 500 company, and one of my engineers said, retarded, in a meeting this morning, I just fired him for cause, and HR is offboarding him as we speak. Former director, National Institute of Health. You know, it's funny because somebody the other day was complaining about me online, and it was like, yeah, Steph, you know, he has these conversations with listeners where he just ends up berating them and like yelling at them and so on, right? Which is not true, really, but that doesn't particularly matter. But what is interesting is the tyranny of offense and feelings is a peculiarly, I mean, it's a hyper-feminization. I don't even think it comes particularly from women. I know that sounds a bit contradictory, but I'll get into that in a sec. But this sort of hyper-feminization where it's like, oh, you said you're offended, I'm offended, you're upset, I'm upset. Have you ever had this feeling? I've had this feeling. I don't have it anymore because I've really organized my life around not having this feeling. But this feeling where you're in a conversation with someone, you ever have this? And you realize, fuck, you're insane. You ever have this? I used to have this sometimes in the business world. You'd have a conflict with someone. And, you know, I have no issues with conflict. I think conflicts are good and healthy and right and positive and productive. But you ever have a conflict with someone and you realize they've lost their fucking minds? Like they've just gone mental. They won't give an inch. They escalate. They get more and more upset. They go round and round. They twist things. And you're like, oh, shit. Sorry. I stepped in a bottomless puddle of giant fucking crazy. It's a creepy feeling, isn't it? You have this sometimes online. And you realize that you're dealing with somebody who's got no connection with reality at all. It's also kind of a dick move to make a joke about Steph's looks when Steph doesn't even know what you look like. Just try to find one that's actually funny at this point. It's a challenge. Why did the bald man draw rabbits on his head from a distance? They look like hares. Being offended is highly correlated with cluster B personality disorders. Ed Dutton did a great vid on this also. Yes, yeah. Well, and when I was a kid, mongoloid was the term, and then it became retarded, and then it was replaced with something else. So it really doesn't matter. Whatever you replace it with, you're going to use a pejorative to talk about stupid people, right? So mongoloid was then offensive, and then it was replaced by retarded. You could use the word retarded, and then now retarded has become offensive. Like it's just going to happen, right? I mean, engineers too, right? So the better the engineer, the more impatient he's going to be. Like if you want smart people in your organization, they're going to view other people as stupid. Right? If you want the best singer in your band, he's going to view other people as bad singers because they are relative to him, right? So if you want the very sort of top talent and top performing people, they're going to be frustrated and impatient with everyone around them who just doesn't get stuff. So, I was arguing with the guy who said the number two exists. Oh, like in a platonic sense? Yeah, for sure. I'm a senior engineer. I have zero patience and my boss has no issue with that. Yeah. And here's the other thing too. So engineers saw, I mean, I was not obviously an official engineer, but I was a chief technical officer and lead researcher in a software company. And I got very impatient with people because I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew where I wanted to bring things and I knew how I could make things happen. So I just made them happen. And I got very impatient with people, especially because I've been programming since the age of 11, right? So, you know, this is almost 20 years experience. And I just got bored, frustrated, and annoyed with people. So engineers, yeah, they're going to think that other people are stupid. And you can have a society where no one gets offended, but then you have a society which is going to collapse. It's going to fail and collapse and be taken over. Because, you know, the sort of chest thumping, "you suck," stuff that men do is how we encourage each other to excellence. And if you want men to not be harsh, that's fine. But that's kind of like saying, well, I want a military when no one's ever uncomfortable. And it's like, okay, then you're just going to lose. Just going to lose. And of course, none of this stuff comes from the free market. It's all government crap, right, as a whole. Yeah, being offended is really a confession that you're just not in the right space, right? You are just not in the right space. Being offended is, I don't have anything to contribute, so I'm just going to get upset. Okay, that's fine. I mean, listen, if I was at some physics conference, other than maybe some abstract topics on the philosophy of science, I couldn't add anything at all of value. I'd just be in the way because I'm not trained in physics and I'm not very good at math. And right, so I just wouldn't have anything in particular to add. So when you don't have anything of value to add, sometimes it's a real challenge to shut your pie hole and stop talking, right? All right, let's see here. Billy Joel is quite the martinet, which is a stage show, big reputation. Oh yeah, I've seen him trashing things and all that, but he's a consummate showman and a very hardworking musician, right? Inventors are inventors because normal is irritating to them. Yeah, for sure. Senior engineer here as well. I get really frustrated with most coworkers. Yes. Yes. If you're, like, people do not understand the incoherent rage seething beneath the surface of anybody who's really good at stuff. There's a great line in Friends where Joey is trying to reason his way through something and Chandra is like, get there faster. And that's life. If you're really good at stuff, and there are other people who, of course, by definition, aren't really good at stuff. The people who aren't really good at stuff have no idea how incredibly frustrating it is. So, you know, just for reference's sake, if you're listening to this and you're not particularly good at stuff and you want to understand the mindset of people who aren't good at stuff, just try speaking at half speed for a decade. Or two. Then you'll get what it's like for competent people to talk to you. I'm already giving myself hives doing that, but that's what it's like. And it actually is even worse than that. like really good engineers are 10, 50, 100, or 1,000 times more productive than average engineers. So just think of having to go through life in slow motion and how insane that would make you feel. Well, that's what it's like being really competent and dealing with average people. No hate or anything. It's not their fault. It's just, that's the way that it is. It absolutely drives you mad. And they won't understand. Well, maybe if they're around even less intelligent people, they'll understand it. But it's really hard for people to understand what it's like for really intelligent, productive, and competent people to be in the workforce as a whole. And for engineers, it's tough because often they'll lack some kind of social skills. So they won't be they won't be the CEO, they won't be the boss. And yet everyone around them tells them what their job is and doesn't understand. I mean, if you ever want to hear incoherent bubbling rage under the surface, have marketing and HR talk to an engineer and tell them what needs to be done. I've been on the receiving end of that. I really have. Like for years, I was on the receiving end of that. I got a whole novel about this where I draw from bits of experience called The God of Atheists. And it's brutal. Absolutely. You know, just is the word. Well, why don't you just do this? Right? Why don't you just get the .NET framework to talk to the Java substructure? Oh, just have them talk. Have them chat. You know, put them in a hot tub. Put on some Barry White or some Sade. You know, just have them chat. Just have them do this, right? So then I would say to the marketing and salespeople, I'd say, well, why don't you sell the software without lying about it? Just don't lie. Just don't tell the client the software can do stuff that it can't do. Don't talk about these magical integrations that we have with systems we've never even heard of. My God, I remember having to write an interface to a Fox Pro database, which hadn't been used since the early days of the Mac. It's madness. Or you'd say to the board would say, well, why don't you just have the software do this? And I'd be, well, why don't you just double your income without increasing your cost? Just do that and we'll have tons of money for all this stuff. But like, well, it's not that simple. And it's like, yes, that's true. I think you're starting to get where I'm coming from. Because everything is magical and easy to people who don't understand a fucking thing. Everything is just magical and easy to people who don't understand a fucking thing. And you have to deal with a lot of those people in the business world. My husband can be so frustrated with his retired coworkers. LOL, he's the best at what he does. And it's the reason why the company is still standing. Yeah. And you get this resentment, right? It's like you as the titan of engineering is holding up the entire company. And then people are just mad at you. Like, why don't you let me hold stuff up? It's because you're 2 inches tall and you can't hold up a goddamn thing. But people get resentful at you, you know, for maybe getting more attention or maybe getting more income or whatever it is. People get resentful at you. And it's like, but without me, you don't even have a job. Crazy. I don't know who Shannon Sharp is. Steph, my brain hurting. Arc, stop its torture. Yeah. 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 It's live, so can't 2x this. Yes, that's right. Honestly, if I could do a whole show like that, you understand, like it would drive you mad. But this is me dealing with most people in the world. And I'm not mad at them. It's just a frustrating situation. God knows I wouldn't want to be them. The idea of moving through life. So the way that I view most people as a whole, the way that I view most people, whether this is helpful for you or not, I don't know, but I view most people as they're underwater. Like, you know how you can sprint and run and run upstairs? So imagine if you were underwater, right? Like you were Gill Man or something like that. So if you were underwater, you couldn't run. You could only move kind of slowly because you're not a shark. You can't swim with the fins, right? You're just a human being. You can breathe underwater or maybe, right? So I just view most people are just underwater. So I can just run all over the place, go up and down stairs, and I can parkour and stuff like that. And they're just, no.
No, no, no.
So it's kind of like if you're playing tag and other people are underwater or moving as if they're underwater and you're not. Like, the game of tag is completely boring. That's how I kind of feel in debates, right? So I just experience other people as just, they're just the sea people. They're just the underwater people. It's slow motion sickness, right? And again, no hate, it's not their fault. It's just that my mind works very rapidly and other people's minds just seem kind of painful. And I used to get quite frustrated because I used to be like, get there faster. And it's like, no, that's unfair because they're underwater. They can't run. Because every time they try to run, they just bounce off and float a little bit. And then they have to wait to come back down. And then they might run again, but they just float a little bit more. They're just zero gravity people, right? They can't run. They can't run. Having to constantly explain stuff to people who can't understand is super frustrating. Well, and that's just the intellectual stuff, because with the intellectual stuff comes the emotional stuff. When the slow types gravitate to project management and provide negative value. Yeah, because a lot of people who are just kind of really slow are perceived as thoughtful. There was some actor who was trying to give another film actor advice, like, how do you look so thoughtful? I don't know, I just look down at a spot on the floor and kind of space out. Elon Musk, he struggles to speak because he has so many other thoughts going on all at once. And well, Kevin Samuels, he would sometimes start three different thoughts right at the same time. You're describing my husband's job to a T. Yeah. And it is genuinely difficult for people, freedomain.com/donate, by the way, to help out the show. I'd appreciate that. It's genuinely difficult for people because they can't comprehend how good you are at things. Right? That they cannot comprehend how good you are at things. They just get baffled and confused and annoyed. And in general, when I was a kid, I was constantly told by people to slow down. They would just get annoyed. I remember with my brother, we had these TVs, right? We always had these cheap old, like 12-inch black and white TVs with these ripples on them because we always got them secondhand. Trying to watch Wimbledon was like a dreamscape from a Besson film. And when I wanted to go from channel 12 to channel 4, I'd just go, and I'd always land on channel 4. It was pretty easy, right? And my brother would get so mad. You're going to break the TV. It's like, I'm not going to break the TV. It's right. And people would always just slow down. Like, no, speed up. But that's not possible, right? I mean, the only thing worse than being frustrated by slow people is just being a slow person. I can't imagine being baffled by dust motes and confused by anything beyond the range of the moment. Because, you know, you've got your narrow area of sad expertise and then there's just these vague shadows of things that move. And, you know, the worst thing about being the average is how much they fucking fake it. Ooh, they fucking fake it, the stinky-ass, middle-of-the-bell-curve liars. They lie. Have you ever had this where you're talking? I used to have this in the business world sometimes as marketing people. I remember there was one when I had my first programming job, some guy had a spreadsheet and he was telling me how it was, in fact, it was a trader out there on the work floor. And he was telling me about it was a neural net. And I'm like, that's not a neural net. That's a spreadsheet, you liar. Like, when you're good at stuff, you realize just how many people are faking it. And it's really crippling. Like when you hear people, I understand tariffs. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, I mean, if you've done Austrian economic stuff or basic free market stuff and so on, you know, Paul Krugman and people, they're just bullshitting. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't have any particular principles. They're just saying shit. They're just saying what is popular. They're saying what gives people more power. And they get paid and elevated based upon their ability to just fucking lie. I was reading The Economist, God help me. God help me. I used to read that thing a lot. Now it's just become a complete pathetic low-rent rag. But I was reading The Economist, and they were talking about the relationship between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Now, you know, like it or not, Elon Musk and Donald Trump are stone geniuses. I mean, Donald Trump obviously has had by far the biggest comeback in political history ever on the planet that will ever occur. Guy basically wandered in from being a real estate and TV, like he did real estate, he did TV stuff. He was successful in just about anything he touched. And then he just decided to go into politics and beat out, 17 other men and women to get the nomination and won and then survived and then, you know, was 94 felonies and then come back. And I mean, it's just absolutely staggering. A man is a stone genius. He's a stone genius. And as robust as human being as can be fashioned without using spitshine and colloidal silver and diamonds. And Elon Musk is an absolute stone genius in terms of he understands politics. He understands rockets, the business, PayPal. He was a computer software guy, even as a kid. I mean, insanely productive and insanely brilliant. And so, you know, these absolute dipshit writers at The Economist putting all these snarky comments, you know, the bromance between Elon Musk and Donald Trump is shaky at its core. And it's like, you don't fucking know. You don't even operate on the same planet as these guys. And you're putting your snarky little shit in about how their relationship goes. And it's like, you don't know. Just ugh, just sad. Yeah, so most people, they're just lying. They're just faking it. They have no clue what's going on. I mean, talk to people about politics if you've had any robust understanding of politics from sort of the ground up. And do that, and you'll just realize. Like, you'll just, the scales will fall from your eyes. And what was it? Michael Crichton used to talk about this, where he'd say, there's this, the Russ Gelman effect or something like that, where it's like, you know, you're reading through the newspaper, and they happen to be talking about an article you're deeply knowledgeable about, and you're like, well, that's not even close to accurate. That's not even close to true. They're getting everything foundationally wrong. But then you go to some other thing where you're not an expert, and somehow you think that they're doing something better or more realistic. I mean, journalists of all people claim to be experts in everything. All right. Yeah, they're just falsifying it all. As somebody says, when riffing with people, I sometimes get the feedback that I'm too serious because they talk about some heavy-duty topics. From my point of view, it seems like it's related to the competency disparity you're talking about right now, because I think of myself as a fairly jovial and having a good sense of humor. What's the best interpretation of this feedback? $30 donation incoming. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, yeah, I mean, what do people mean by heavy topics? So what people mean by heavy topics is stuff they know they should be thinking about, but it's inconvenient for them to do so. Stuff they know they should be thinking about, but it's inconvenient for them to do so. They just call it heavy, man. Just heavy. Somebody says, I felt that way at my first two jobs working in kitchens. Immediately came in, cleaned, organized, and streamlined the kitchen and made the job 10 times easier, and they all hated me. Except the owners. Yeah. Somebody says, I can relate to this a lot, but from a blue-collar point of view, the dumb blue-collar workers are a few tiers below the dumb white-collars. Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you just learn Spanish? Then you can just chat with so many more people. Simples. Yeah. Everyone else's problems to the dumb, everyone else's problems are obvious and simple. You know, like, the governments that can't fix a fucking pothole on the ground totally care about the temperature 100 years from now. Absolutely. The governments that can't fix the schools that they can literally see from their offices, they can't fix those schools, but they could totally reform Afghanistan. Oh, it's great. Absolutely fantastic. Every time the government deals with me, it's really frustrating and annoying. But every government agency I have nothing to do with is staffed by massive angels who just want the very best for humanity and have no self-interest or corruption whatsoever. Thoughts on Deep Think? Deep Think? Deep Seek? Is there another one, Deep Think? I've read that when the Chinese have copied Western computer chips, they've often been able to improve performance by 15%. It's much easier to have marginal innovations when you can skip 95% of the development. I assume DeepThink is built upon massive amounts of stolen Western code with some improvements. Yes, you know, it must be very tough for all of the non-profits that stole everyone's work to have their work stolen as well. Damn it! You want to be that thief that keeps the stolen goods. Otherwise, it's totally unjust. Totally unfair. And what is this saying? The people are saying that ChatGPT is the first AI to lose its job to AI. Work was always wanting me to pair program. It drives me mad. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to help a guy at work the other day. He was just dumb, frustrating for me, but I felt sorry for him. Yeah. Don't get me started on project managers. Come on, man. There's got to be a place for the women. I think Musk has difficulty speaking due to severe trauma. Why do you think he has difficulty speaking? I think he's quite eloquent. Steph, I've heard people say that Kevin Samuels faked his calls. They were scripted. Some even provided proof. Do you think it matters? I don't particularly believe that the calls were scripted. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. All right. When I do come across great blue-collar workers, it's fucking amazing. I love blue-collar work. I work as a welder primarily. Some of the things I build and or help build are awesome. Yeah, that's true. You think too much. Yeah, you overthink things. Really. The people get really mad if their cell phone slows down or if it has to be rebooted or something. But apparently other people overthink things, yeah. Oh, yeah, so people are like, you know, the tariffs that Trump is going to, what, tomorrow slap 25% on Mexico and on Canada and then 10% on China. And people are like, well, these tariffs are going to raise prices. My brain is so small, it can only hold one variable. I can't do more than one variable. Well, tariffs are going to increase the price of goods coming in to the country. And therefore, tariffs will make things more expensive and drive inflation, because everything else is equal and nothing changes no matter what. I mean, it would be different if it was a free market, right? Then I can understand tariffs would be bad. But, I mean, everybody understands who's got half a brain, right? Not even a quarter of a brain. 10%. 10% is all you need. That the tariffs are there to move jobs domestically. And the reason why it's important to move jobs domestically is that it's infinitely more expensive for the government to have people on welfare and disability than it is for them to actually have jobs and contribute to the society. So that's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious. Also, what is America having a Vietnam and a half every year from fentanyl? A lot of which is coming in through the southern border, but some through the northern border. And they need this shit to be sorted out, because it's catastrophic for the economy to have 100,000 or more people die a year from fentanyl overdoses, not to mention those who get crippled or half brain destroyed and end up as half vegetables or unable to work because of fentanyl poisoning and so on. So Trump needs the countries to sort out the fentanyl issue. And one of the leverages, one of the ways he's going to do it is through, and of course, is through tariffs. So if tariffs reduce the amount of fentanyl coming into the country, then that's going to bring prices down, because fentanyl deaths are incredibly bad for the economy as a whole. Think of all of the amount of time, effort, and energy that's poured into a human life. And if it just gets wiped out through fentanyl, all of that time, effort, and energy from the parents, from the teachers, from the dentists, from the doctors, like everyone, it just gets completely wiped. They were enslaved because they put all of that effort in on the belief or idea that the life was going to continue. So. Yeah, I mean, I think in general, there are maybe 10 to 20,000 people who are truly essential in the world, and everyone else is just kind of along for the ride. I mean, in terms of like basic economic productivity and so on, right? I mean, if you think of the number of people in the music industry versus the number of acts that genuinely sell and make a lot of money, it's not more than a few thousand. Not more than a few thousand. New study looking at ancient DNA from Eastern Eurasian populations obtains and analyzes polygenic scores and finds, quote, positive selection for cognitive-related traits such as IQ. Oh, well, boy, that's a shocker. I'm really glad that that has been explained, been examined, been explored. Oh, man. Per CNBC, this is from yesterday, a record number of consumers are making minimum credit card payments. The share of active credit card holders just making minimum payments rose to 10.75% in the third quarter of 2024, the highest ever in data going back to 2012. So, and also, I mean, so the powerhouses of, like, we're at the top of the arc, man. We're just starting to go down, right? I mean, Trump will reverse some of that with return to some portions of meritocracy, or wouldn't it be fantastic if they could get rid of the Department of Education? But, so, in 2022, Q1 revenue for Apple was $123.9 billion. In Q1 revenue, well, it can't be, that has to be 2024, right? Apple Q1 revenue, because Q1 would be January to March of this year. And of course, it's only the end of January. So, yeah, there's something not right with this. And this had 2.8 million views. Let me just click on it, because that's not right. So the post is Apple Q1 revenue is $124.3 billion. 2022 Q1 revenue was $123.9 billion. 0.3% revenue growth over 3 years. We've had about 15% inflation since then. iPhone sales are negative year over year. This is not a growth company. So that's just incorrect, right? Because you can't have, you could have, well, when this was posted, you wouldn't even have month one revenue. So this is the kind of thing that just kind of bugs me. It just kind of bugs me. Now, let me just, but because this just, you can't have, because they say 2022, 0.3% revenue growth over 3 years. So that would put us to 2025, but you don't have Q1. Q1 is quarter one, right? So January to March, end of March. So something's not right about all of this. And let's see, has anyone pointed this out? Just having a look here. No. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad that people, nobody seems to have even noticed that there is no possibility of having 2025 Q1. Now, 2024, could you say 2022 to 2024? Maybe they mean Q1 2024. But he says we've had 15% inflation since then, over 3 years. So, no, could only be 2 years. But nobody's noticed this. But yeah, so Apple has just turned into it's all just a bunch of equality of outcome, social planning, and so on, right? It's wild that they still have not released the name of the third pilot, apparently, like from the crash, the Black Hawk crash, into the passenger jet over DC. So from AF Post, they say the pilot in command of the Black Hawk that crashed into the passenger jet over DC with a woman, they say they had 500 hours of flight experience, which doesn't seem overly much. But they won't release the name. Is it a black woman? Is it a trans woman? I don't know. It's pretty pretty wild how you just don't get facts. If it breaks the narrative, you just can't get facts. All right, so let me get back to your questions and comments. I'm not going to do a super long show tonight because I'm still, my energy's kind of fading in and out based upon, I don't know, the mystery goop that's going on with my virus attack. I'm going to have to set fire to this microphone. All right. The worst is when average or slow people around you think they're smarter than you. They just don't understand. No. I can tell Steph worked out before this stream, and it's not just the muscle shirt. Yeah, the mediocre white man. I mean, it's very sad. I thought Steph was sick. How is he so on fire tonight? I've been gathering myself all day. You know, one of these things where it's like, I think I'll get up. I think I won't. I think I'll lie down for a little more. Yeah, tariffs are infinitely superior to income tax, for sure. Did you see the videos of the plane crashing into houses in Philadelphia? Yeah, I mean, this is Atlas Shrugged territory, right? Considering the square root of half the productivity, 8 billion people on Earth is 10,000 people producing half the value. Yeah, for sure. I'm a little unsure about those fentanyl overdoses. Isn't it drug users taking it and ODing because it's mixed in their heroin, weed, or W/E, whatever? Does it somehow get into the hands of non-drug users? Yeah, it does. So, I mean, yeah, because you can't even take a Tylenol. Not that you should, right? But you can't even take a Tylenol from anyone because you don't know what the hell's in there. Don't take anything that, in my view, doesn't come directly in a sealed package to you. A vast majority of Chinese people don't have an inner voice, though. They might be intelligent, but they don't have the same spirit that Westerners do. Is that true? I mean, I know a third of people don't seem to have any inner voice. Is it clustered by ethnicity that way? Yeah, fentanyl is wildly powerful. Even small amounts of residue encountered secondhand can be fatal. Yes, very true. Very true. But the condoms in Gaza, I think, are used for weapons. I think that they're repurposed as weapons. All right. Let's see if I've got any other last comments or issues. The trust in the media is collapsing, continues the slow death. I think that's wonderful because, of course, the media did not want Trump to get in and Trump got back in. So that's quite powerful. I did, God help me. This is like gambling addict going back to a casino. Hit me with a why. Hit me with a why if you watch any of the confirmation hearings for, what was it, the triple punch, Cash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? I'm afraid I did. I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it at all. And I was like, I shouldn't watch this. But my hand couldn't stop it. I just couldn't stop. It's like on my honeymoon. Just couldn't stop it. Did you watch any of these things? It is really, you know, the memes coming out of it are actually quite powerful. The memes coming out of it are really quite powerful. So, you know, the long-suffering men with the screeching harpies around them of both the male and female persuasion, you know, when they've layered in all of these women and some men, you know, just, and another thing, right? I mean, they're just not, you know, they're just not smart people. And Robert F. Kennedy was harangued by a guy who he actually was roommates once in college and they went to each other's weddings and he's had him testify before, totally friendly, but it's all just a show. It's all just a show. It's all nonsense. It's all, you know, it's the old George Carlin thing. It's a big club and you ain't in it. Neither am I. Right. But they're just not impressive people. They're just all of the city gotcha stuff, right? Yeah, Bernie ranting about onesies. I mean, the man has a completely tin ear. Do you remember gosh, what was it? Tucker Carlson ending Mike Pence's career by saying, well, I care more about Americans than people in Afghanistan. And Mike Pence is like, that's not my concern. It's like, that is a bad answer. That is, at least fake it, right? At least just fake it. And seeing these silly gotchas going in these confirmation hearings, like, here's a onesie. Like, I got to tell you, man, vaccines, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just reading the room, man. Vaccines, a lot of skepticism, man. People are finding out, well, hang on a sec. The Amish have no vaccines, and the Amish aren't dying in droves, and the Amish don't seem to have much autism, right? These are just facts. I don't know if they're true or not. These are just sort of things that I have heard. It seems to be the case. You know, I certainly think since COVID, anybody who still believes anything that government health agencies say at all is almost beyond, almost beggars belief, right? I mean, only a few percentage points of people in Africa got vaccinated and they're fine. It's not a winter of severe disease and death for people in Africa, right? So it is anybody who believes. And so there's this splash damage that came out of COVID. And no, it's only 2 weeks, well, 2 years. And then we're going to pretend nothing happened. But everything is now open to question, right? There's a principle in law, which is false in one thing, false in everything, in that if you can prove that a witness is lying, then you assume that they're lying about everything. And this is like, please understand, like, just to read the rooms in the rooms around you, everybody's reality is post-COVID is hanging by a thread. Everybody's reality is just hanging by a thread. Because if you've ever been told someone is a really bad person and then you go and talk to them or meet them or see them or chat with them and they're actually kind of reasonable and nice, then the bad person is the person who's lying about the quote bad person, right? So the amount of lies that were going on around COVID are absolutely staggering. Like, it's, we get it, right? But for most people, the idea that they were absolutely lied to about so much around COVID, it's really destabilizing to people. The idea that they have only been pretending to be virtue when in fact they've just been blindly obedient to pathologically false sociopaths. Oof. Oof. I don't know, man. I would like Cash Patel if he changed his name to Bitcoin Patel. Nice. Yeah, I read his last book. It was pretty good. Somebody says, for the first time in my life, I turn on the news and it's all good news. Like, Trump is cutting harder and deeper than I ever thought he would. Yeah. Well, and you don't get Trump's second term without the gap 4 years, right? You don't get that. Because Trump, when he went in first time, was like, oh, reach across the aisle. Let's find a way to work together with these people. And that's all gone, right? That's all gone. Oh, is there an animation of The Fountainhead coming up? That's good. The movie was not good. I never watched it more than the first 10 or 15 minutes. Well, yeah, I mean, ivermectin was like, didn't it win the Nobel Prize or something like that? And then they just referred to it as horse paste. Not fit for human consumption, even though it has been one of the most successful medicines in human history. And they just, because they had to say there's no treatment for COVID in order to get their emergency use authorization, right? So just the scale at which people are being lied to. Thank you, Matt. The scale at which people are being lied to is almost beyond their comprehension. It's almost beyond their comprehension. They're just right on the edge of, holy shit, everything is false. Everything is false. And that is really tough. That's really tough for people. to process. It really, there's going to be a lot of like severe breaks with reality from people. Right. So, I mean, even the fact now that people as a whole are saying, even the CIA is saying, yeah, pretty much a lab leak. Right. I mean, this is partly why I think it's partly why I got canceled was my presentation called The Case Against China. The Case Against China. China. So, yeah, I mean, I was canceled in part for that. No fun being early after a while. Hey, I'm early. That means I get all the arrows in my back and then people use me for fertilizer for their future falsehoods. All right. China. China. The number of people who went along with COVID-19 and the vax absolutely shocked me at the time. Well, I mean, I hate to sort of say it shouldn't have shocked you, but if you know anything about the Stanley Milgram experiments, people, like the majority of people will be murderous if guys in white coats tell them to. Like, the majority of people will literally kill other human beings if they're told to. They have no morals. They have no conscience to speak of. They have no inner voice. They will murder people if they're told to. And they'll might resist it and they might feel sweaty about it. They might feel, I think your stance on George Floyd was probably the final straw for you getting banned. Yeah, for sure. It's when I was doing the interview with, I did an interview with two cops, one black cop, one white cop, where we talked about George Floyd and the risk of people's just health going into a death spiral when they get arrested, and that it didn't necessarily mean that the chokehold was bad and all of that. And yeah, that was clearly too much. That was too much for people because they needed their summer of murder, right? So people are kind of hanging on by a thread, and there's this kind of unspoken contract in society at the moment that we don't fucking talk about that stuff. Do you have this? Hit me with a why if you have this in your social or familial circle. You just can't talk about this shit. Like, do not circle back. Do not say, oh, are you not going for your eighth booster? Why not? Why not? You want granny to die? Why aren't you going for your eighth fucking booster? Do you have that? Do you have that? Like, people just, they won't fucking talk about it. I mean, when I meet people, I'll bring it up. When I meet people, I'll bring it up. Hey, how was COVID for you? Things got a little fucking crazy there, didn't they? Things got a little nuts there, didn't they? COVID is just gone. It's memory hold, right? Don't talk about COVID like the Germans after World War II. Oh, you kidding? The Germans have done nothing but talk about World War II after that. Got two people to talk about it. I don't think it was quite so mad in the UK, though. I was pretty mad in the UK. It was pretty bad. No, I said, I will openly say, I meet people socially, you know, whatever, playing pickleball or whatever, or tennis. I meet people socially, like, yeah, I was COVID for you. Things got kind of crazy there, right? And what was your relationship like with the unvaccinated? Do you think they had a point? I will ask people. I'm not letting this shit go. I am not letting this shit go. No fucking chance. I will not let this go. I'm not letting people get away with that. Bunch of ghouls. No, I won't. And it's optimistic and all of that. It's actually, it is an act of love to not people completely gaslight the past. It's an act of love, but people don't like it. They get tense, really tense, right? Nobody wants to look back in the mirror and say, oh, I guess I was a useful idiot for evildoers. Nobody wants to look back and say that, right? Too bad. Maybe you shouldn't have been. I won't do it. I won't do it, man. Yeah. And I say, do you know anybody who's got sick? I said, do you know anybody who didn't take the vax? Did they get sick? Do you know the people who did take the vax? Did they get sick or did they have any health issues? And it all just comes out. It all just comes out. No, I'm not. I will keep talking about this shit until 18 minutes after I'm dead. No, it's gone. It's absolutely memory hold. And don't let it get memory hold, man. Don't let it get memory hold. I won't do it. Made my life pretty fucking uncomfortable at times. And then I had to explain why everybody was losing their fucking minds to my daughter, though not in those terms, of course, right? I won't let it go either. They don't get to erase their actions. Nope. Nope. That's a good point, Steph. I bring it up from time to time. Very seldomly do I hear others bring it up. And get this, every time they do, they whisper, even if no one else is around. Yeah, for sure. Tom says, the COVID narrative gave crime bullies the perfect excuse to abuse people around them. I took the opportunity to dismiss all those people from my life. It's good to see Trump shut down gain of function. They were working on some seriously bad stuff down in Texas under Biden. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody says, I'm still not letting HIV or 9/11 go. Most people still believe nonsense about both. Well, I'll tell you this, though, man. I mean, it's a different matter if you participated in things yourself. Yeah, what was it? Somebody was like grilling Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It's like, so you think that Lyme disease was a bioweapon? He's like, yeah, probably did say that. Like, if you go down to the woods today, you're in for a big surprise. All right. Chris says, I mentioned COVID to a couple of pretty smart engineers about a year ago, and they realized how much they forgot about it. We ended up having a productive conversation about it. Okay, let me ask you this question. It's a really, really big question for me. I think about this a lot. Honestly, this is like half an obsession for me. How many people in your life would stand up for you no matter what? Even if it costs them their jobs, even if it costs them their income, even if it costs them their reputations, how many people in your life would stand up for you no matter what? I think I have maybe 6 or 7, maybe 5, maybe 6. I'm really fascinated. And I remember this watching the movie Goodfellas many years ago, where Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro are like best friends for decades. They're criminals, of course, right? Sociopaths. But they're best friends for decades. And then Joe Pesci goes too far and ends up having to be wiped out. And the Robert De Niro character is just, you know, chatting away with him and then leads him into the basement where he gets killed, right? No bond. No bond. I do listen to some true crime stuff from time to time, if I'm sort of doing other things. And the number of times it's like, well, this guy went missing and his family is now in their 20th year of raising awareness, of funding private investigators, and they're still trying to find him. They're still trying to find out what happened to him. And that's wild to me. I mean, it's not wild to me in terms of my current family, my family of origin. They wouldn't, you know, felt like they wouldn't get a cup of water if you were dying of thirst. So I'm really fascinated by this question of, in particular, family of origin bonds, you know, because everyone's like, oh, family is everything. And, you know, family, you do for family and you make your sacrifices for family and people would just about anything for family. But that's not how it played out under COVID, man. That is not how it played out over COVID. That's for sure. For sure. People turned on family members like a bunch of rabid jackals on a wounded baby zebra. Was not pretty, man. Where was the loyalty? Where was the loyalty? Where is the love? Where is the love? Yeah, because I do hear these families, you know, they're still trying to find the killer of their daughter, you know, 20 years later, and they're just, you know, they just really dig in and it becomes their mission in their life and all of that. Like, that's just wild. The family of origin stuff. It took like 3 minor disagreements for my entire family. I shouldn't laugh because it's a long time ago now. It took about 3 minor disagreements for my family of origin stuff. My family of origin structure just completely collapsed. For me to become absolutely unacceptable. It's simply unacceptable. Because this woman wrote about this on X recently. I think about this a lot. I really do think about this a lot. Let me just find it here. Oh, did I go past? God help me. I will find it. Oh no. Oh God. All right, I will find it. But yeah, and basically this happened. Oh yeah, here we go. This is from Snafu. And he wrote, "My wife received a DM out of the blue from a friend of 4 decades informing her they were no longer friends. Goodbye forever, more or less. This woman was in her wedding. She'd gotten pregnant very young, kept the baby, and married the father. Most of her friends cut her loose because she was no longer free to go out and party, but my wife stuck with her. She often babysat the kids at no cost. This young couple didn't have 2 nickels to rub together, so mom and dad could spend some time alone together. She is the godmother of at least 1 of the kids and was a major presence in their lives as they were growing up. They called her Aunt So-and-so. The missus supported this woman through her affair, encouraging her to end it, near divorce, and years later in her final divorce. We later attended her second wedding. The parting message was a generic rant about Trump and MAGA, along with some low-quality anti-Trump memes. Nothing specific about anything my missus had said or done. The woman apparently copy-pasted it and sent it to multiple people. She subsequently posted a virtue-signaling announcement that she was cutting ties with all the bad people. My wife very rarely discussed politics with this woman and doesn't post political content on social media. The weirdest thing is that I never thought of this woman as especially far left. She's just a typical, middle-aged, UMC, suburban, liberal white woman. I don't really know what to say about this. It's just where we are now, I guess. So, it happened, of course, with Trump. It happens with accusations of various bigotries and so on. It happened with COVID, of course, in a fairly brutal fashion. Thank you, David. And just no bond. Just no bond. Just erased. Just erased. Steve says, the quickening effect of COVID was dizzying to live through. It'll never wear off. Kind of like those who live through the Depression. You just can't lose sight of these experiences. Yeah. There's a guy down the road to me whose son died in a pool on holiday. He started a charity in his name and are very active doing events. Yeah. My local lake has a great public walking path around it. They had signs saying, only walk in a clockwise manner to prevent COVID. I made a point to walk counterclockwise every time. Yeah. Close to half of the J6ers were turned in by their family members. Unbelievable. Yeah, there's this thing, there's this big battle going on X at the moment, which is, what are the concentric rings of care, right? So the Christians are saying, look, you take care of your kids, your family, then your extended family, then your neighbors, then your town, then your state, your country, and then, you know, at some point you can help others, right? But you've got to take care of this, you know, you see this other orienting versus inner orienting, right? People who are more bonded to others and people who are the other, the alien, the different, foreign, versus more bonded to themselves. And so a lot of cynical atheists and agnostics try to sort of trap the Christians into, you know, endless foreign aid and so on, because you have to take care of everyone and you have to love everyone as yourself. And this is not true in Christianity as a whole, that you're supposed to take care of your kids, your family, your extended family, and so on. And then, you know, if there's stuff left over at the very end. But that is foundationally really difficult for people. And I'm thinking about this a lot today. What is it that motivates people as a whole? What is it that motivates people as a whole to love that, or to claim to love that which is most distant, rather than actually have loyalty to them or those who are supposed to be closer? I mean, you know, the sort of the typical example is, and it's a lot of it is sort of the liberal white women who are like, well, we have to save, you know, things in Africa, right? We have to save the people in Africa, right? Even though people in Africa, unfortunately, one of the reasons why AIDS spreads quite a bit is because they use sand as a stimulant in sexual activities, which of course creates abrasions and so on, right? So people who are like, I want to help people in Africa, and yet they don't do much for their own local community, if anything. It's a very interesting mindset to me. It is a very interesting mindset. And so the idea that you should take care of the people who are closest to you first and foremost, and then and only later have care and concern for everyone else in the world, and basically because there's so much to take care of locally, you never end up having much for the world as a whole. So what are your thoughts as to why? Somebody, Jared, says they can feel good without ties to the outcomes. That's some truth to that. Steve says, politics sat me on my ass and showed me there's no loyalty in it. My trust expands to my immediate family, right? And defood Freedomainers, ranchers. And that's about it. A bit of trust for sincere Christians. Yeah. I think, if I had to guess, I don't know the answer to this, because it's a big old question, right? But I think the reason why people focus on helping people on the other side of the world is it doesn't require them to be personally virtuous in their lives, right? Obviously, they can say things, maybe they even donate money and so on. But in order to say, like for people to say and to believe, well, you should take care of your kids, your husband, your wife, your family first, would indicate that you have those bonds at all. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't. I mean, let me ask you this. How many people, what percentage of people in your life would you, do you accept or do you believe have genuine, deep moral love and attachment to those around them? What percentage of the people in your life would you say have deep and moral and virtuous love and attachments to those in their life? It's not as common as you might think. And I think people still want the dopamine of, quote, being loved and being good, so they just do things elsewhere where they can't be questioned, right? You send money to build a house in Africa, everyone's like grateful. They send you letters saying how wonderful you are, but they don't judge you morally. They don't call you up on your shortcomings. They just praise you because you give them money, right? So I think it is a way of gaining a sense of appreciation without actually having to be personally virtuous, if that makes sense. Yeah, it is pretty wild. In the past 24 hours, all the stuff that has gone on from Trump's executive's orders is really something. It's going even faster than I expected. All right. So, higher percentage, the more rural and red you go. It's easy to be seen as beneficent contributor when the standards are almost non-existent. It's treasonous too. Well, it would be interesting to see. I mean, we know that single women vote left and unmarried, right? Women. So to me, if you can keep women single with or without children, I don't know what the difference. I think single mothers vote quite left as well. But yeah, if you keep women single, then they tend to mother the planet, which is highly profitable. It's like, why is it that women are constantly encouraged to divorce men? Because when they divorce men under the modern laws, look at Mackenzie. Is it Mackenzie? Bezos? Right? If they divorce their men, then they get millions or hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars, which then leftists can pilfer from them under the guise of altruism. All right. Well, I can feel my energy beginning to fade, so I don't want to do anything less than maximum quality. So I will close it off here. Of course, if you're listening to it later, I get that people are having a tough time economically. I completely sympathize, understand that for sure. And if you can't afford, no problem at all. Continue to listen and enjoy. That's totally fine. But if you can help out the show, freedomain.com/donate, it's all gratefully, humbly, and deeply appreciated. If you can, it's very, very humbly appreciated. Thank you so much. Have yourself an absolutely glorious evening, my friends. I will talk to you soon. Lots of love from up here. Bye.